सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्परदन्ताय विघ्ननाशिने शिवसुताय श्रीवरदमूर्तये नमो नमः। ॐ श्रीमन्महागणाधिपतये नमः। Yesterday happened to be the Shivaratri. I want to remind you of this, the Ishvara, before I go to the actual text. Now we have been studying the Shastram for quite some time. We understand how the reality is, what the reality is, and how the reality is not an object, nor is it a subject. Even though reality is neither an object of knowledge nor the subject of knowledge, but still it is available for its recognition only as the truth of the subject, the knower or experiencer. And this reality also, even though it's available for, it is said that it is available for recognition as the truth of the subject, still it is to be understood only in terms of its nature of knowing. So thereby we understand that here any word used to imply the reality is only in terms of its nature. And we also understood the fact how and why words cannot reveal the reality. Therefore, how no word can reveal the reality. We just understood very clearly. Why the words cannot reveal the reality? Because you know very well, word is expression of a thought. Definitely, any word indicating any object, indicating anything, a word reveals something. Why I'm telling you all these things? I'm preparing you in the form of next topic of Pramanam. Because in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the next topic to be understood here is, I gave you last class, I summed up the important things which we need to understand from the first chapter of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Even though I summed up the aspects, important aspects of the first chapter of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, that in the very topic itself, we had to get back into the same chapter to understand certain important things that Adi Shankara Bhagavadpada discusses in his commentaries. And one such aspect we need to understand is the Pramanyam. What is that important topic we are going to understand from the very first chapter? So we are going to study Brihadaranyaka Upanishad a little differently. Last class, I gave you a summary of the first chapter because I thought instead of making you go through the portions which we are not really benefiting from, you know, upasanas, etc., let me tell you the entire content of the entire first chapter. So I gave you the most important content, all important factors that we need to understand from the first chapter of Brihadaranyaka. So now still we cannot proceed to the next chapter. Because there, of those important factors, what are all the things we need to understand elaborately? That one of the aspects is, I need to explain to you the content of the certain Bhashyam portions. That is, important topic is Pramanyam. It is not that I want to teach you. That is discussed by Adi Shankara Bhagavadpada in his commentary on certain mantras of the first chapter of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Shastra Pramanyam. Because many people many times ask this question. Whenever we say, you know, Vedanta Shastram is the Pramanam. Now as Vedanta Shastra students, and we know, we teach definitely the very beginning of the class, the very beginning course itself, the lectures, introductory talks, we always emphasize this fact, Shastra, why should we study the Upanishads? Or why should we study Bhagavad Gita? That the answer is given, that you are studying the Shastram because it serves as a means of the knowledge of the truth. Shastras, Jnanasya, Brahma Jnana Praptyartham Shastram Pramanam. Brahma Jnana Praptyartham, Atma Jnana Praptyartham Shastram Pramanam. Vedanta Shastram is a valid, authentic means of knowledge of the attainment of the truth. Knowledge of the truth. Knowledge of the truth. So, attainment of the knowledge of the truth. Knowledge of the truth. So, if it is a pramanam, and why should we know the truth? But also we understand, because knowledge of the truth and moksha are not two different things. Knowledge itself is moksha. Knowledge itself is moksha means we need not do anything after the attainment of knowledge. And so this knowledge of the truth need not be implemented in the form of practice to enjoy the benefit of knowledge. After the attainment of knowledge of the truth, cannot be implemented in the form of action to enjoy the benefit. Because knowledge itself is the result. You know, that is why we say, Swamiji used to say, there's no such a thing called practical Vedanta. Why Vedanta need not be practiced, cannot be practiced? Vedanta is meant for understanding, absorption, assimilation, ascertainment. As understanding itself is the result, is the moksha. Therefore, knowledge itself is moksha, which means when the moksha is our choiceless end, and knowledge itself is moksha means there is a connection between this knowledge and moksha, as sadhana sadhya sambandha, as the means and the end connection is there. And we know, therefore we know the value of the knowledge of the truth, and that is why we are committed to the pursuit of the knowledge of the truth. And once you're committed, and how are we going to attain the jnanam? Just by crushing our intellect, or by heading so many other things, or gathering information, listening to the lectures, or going to YouTube and then listening to all sorts of things, or Facebook, reading lot of things, and simply gathering any amount of information available on all through all the media. What? Or practicing some meditation at some text? No. This jnanam has to rise, means ajnanam will resolve only when the knowledge rises. In fact, resolving the ajnanam is the attainment of knowledge. And for which, that's why you need a pramanam, and definitely Shavedanta Shastram, when it is studied properly with the help of the teacher, when the words are very carefully unfolded, handled, definitely there is no, our Swarupam is reflected and we understand. So it serves as a pramanam, means of the attainment of knowledge of the truth. And we say, without denying other people, there may be other pramanams available, but we don't know which pramanam is available. as long as we know, this is the only pramanam available to our knowledge. If other people say that other pramanams, why can't we try? They can, they were most welcome to go and try their pramanams. They can enjoy the benefit also. But, and how much it is going to work and all, we don't need to take the risk. But here it is, somebody says, already who experimented it, who enjoyed the benefit of this, and it has been there timelessly in India, this the tradition, that definitely Shastram serves as a pramanam. So when, that's why we say before trying the medicine, you cannot trust. No, you cannot believe it works, nor can, whether the medicine works to really cure your disease, or you cannot, nor can you conclude that it will not work at all. Only you can try it only if you have trust. If you don't try it, you cannot say whether it works or doesn't work. But for to try, you must have first of all faith. That is why here also, in the operating is from a Shastra Pramanam also, definitely you cannot say it is very useful without having studied, without having tried to see whether the Shastram works or not. You cannot say Shastram is very, very useful, really, you know. You cannot say. And nor can you say, no, Shastram is useless, because you have not tried it. Try in terms of studying it. And even to study, begin to study, you must have some Shraddha, faith. That is why Shastram always, one of the qualifications is what? Shraddha in studying the Shastram is emphasized. Once you have Shraddha, and then you start studying, accepting it as a pramanam, and definitely pramanam, it works. So people will question. Therefore, here, and Shankar Bhagavatpada, even in Taittiriya Bhasham also, he does it, that we will see that sometime. But here definitely he gives a lot, discusses this topic of Shastram being the Pramanam. That is my important next discussion I'm going to present for all of you in the Brihadaranyaka first chapter. But to go for you, for me to take you to the topic of Pramanam. Pramanam means the Pramanyam is a noun. Now hereafter you have to learn this also. Because you come to Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, so you can't take things for granted. You have to be a little serious about understanding Sanskrit words. Okay? Pramanyam is a noun. Pramanam is an adjective. Pramanam means the means of knowledge. But Pramanyam means the text having the status of being the Pramanam. Okay, Pramanya means noun form. Something enjoying the status of being the Pramanam is known, is called Pramanyam. So Pramanam, Pramanyam. It says Shastram is the Pramanam, means what? Shastram is a means of knowledge. But Shastram has the Pramanyam, means Shastram has the status of being the means of knowledge. Being the Pramanam. Status of being. It's called Pramanyam. So how Shastram has the status of being the Pramanam? It's called Shastra Pramanyam, and that is the topic is going to be discussed. But before I take up the topic, I need to explain this. What is this? What is a word? Shabdaha. Now we simply know the word, meaning of the word. You know, we know the meaning of the word. Of course, we use the words. Words are constituted of sounds, and words form the sentences. Words together form the sentences. The sentences convey, are used to convey their ideas. This much we know. So, Shabdaha. In Sanskrit Bhasha, the word Shabdaha means sound. So Shabda also means word. A sound, definitely a word is a sound, but any sound is need not be a word, isn't it? Word is a sound. Any word uttered in any language is definitely a sound. A word expressed is the word. Your word is a sound. Therefore, the word Shabdaha is also used to mean the words. But any sound is not a word. When you say, all sounds, they don't make any sense. Therefore, meaningful sound. Word is a meaningful sound, but any sound may not be a word. But here we say, the sound, what is a word? Word can indicate a one's own self. A word can indicate any object. It can be an abstract noun. It can be a pronoun. It can be a common noun. It can be any noun. It can indicate anything. So that is why we say always, we distinguish one thing. This I, the first person singular pronoun I, is also a word. And any other pronouns we use as he, she, it, that are also pronouns, words. But those pronouns are used to indicate anything other than one's own self. Similarly, other words used are to used to indicate other objects of the world. Subtle or gross, perceptible, imperceptible. The words are used to indicate the corresponding objects, like stomachache. You can't perceive stomachache, isn't it? Imperceptible. Not for stomachache is not available for perception, but still something understandable is available for your thought conception, not for sense perception. Or backache, any pain for that matter. You know, even if you say sugar is sweet, when you are enjoying sweet, sugar is sweet, can say other person also has to have it. Like this, here, there are whether subtle or gross, perceptible or imperceptible, you know, words are used to indicate the objects. So, we get enough. Word is definitely uttered, is an expression of the thought. So, Shabdaha is an expression of the thought. Which means, there cannot be an expression of the word if the thought does not rise, a corresponding thought does not rise. That is why anything you utter is only an expression of thought. And that's why we should not say, we cannot say, I did not mean, okay? Even if you mean or we don't mean, you had entertained that thought. Not that you created the thought, you cannot be blamed for any thought you entertain, you have. Thought does rise on its own by itself. There's some reason why a given thought rises also sometimes. But when you express, whether what is expressed is a word or many words or sentence, but still anything you uttered is what? Definitely expression of thought. That is why we are always, you know, before opening the mouth and saying something, we have to make sure that what we are saying. So word is expression of thought. And now the question comes, what is a thought? The thought, there's varieties of thoughts. We talk about the thoughts constituting the mind, manaha, thoughts forming the intellect, thoughts pertaining to memory, and we have to talk about the ego. So, the emotions, in the mind we say emotions. So there is the thought modification. Each thought, any thought is subject to, what no, modification, subject to change. That thought are of the nature of undergoing changes. They rise, remain and resolve. Definitely thoughts are of the nature of undergoing changes. But thought has to rise Therefore, thought is the source of the word. Thought is the source of the word. Now the next question comes, and this, so shabd, I said, the meaningful shabd, the word in Sanskrit is called padam. Padam or shabdaha or vak. Vak. Vak means speech. Vak, shabdaha, padam. Now, so this thought which is the source of the word, what is this thought? The thought in Sanskrit is called vrittihi. Vrittihi, it's a feminine gender word, strilinga shabdaha. See, don't take this information for granted. I really mean it, okay? Because we need to understand, a lot of clarity has to come here. Only then I can explain to you the process of knowledge. How does knowledge of objects take place? So, the vrittis. So, vrittihi, singular word. Vrittayaha, plural word. Vrittihi, vritti, vrittayaha. Ikarantaha, strilingaha, vritti, shabdaha. So, vrittihi means thought. Therefore, knowledge rising in the form of a thought is also called what? Vritti jnanam. So, any thought is vrittihi. Now, what are all the vrittis? Okay? What are all the vrittis we have? Suppose if I say cot or mattress, window, light, door, picture, bell, food, water, any word I say, definitely every word is an expression of a thought. So what is this thought? Thought is, you can say, this particular, in this context, a mere thought is, a thought by itself is inert. A thought by itself is inert, but a thought can never be inert because thought is never independent of its truth. When the wave rises, what do we see? We say wave rises in the water. What does it mean? When the wave rises, definitely stillness undergoes a change in order to rise. Then there's a wave. Wave is an effect of the disturbance on the part of the stillness. Stillness is disturbed, then wave rises. Therefore, we say stillness is the cause of the wave. But even though stillness alone undergoes a change to become the wave, but there must be definitely what? Definitely with the stillness, there must be what? With the wave, there must be water, isn't it? Similarly here, even though we say it is the Maya, it is the Maya which undergoes a change. Maya means avidya, which undergoes a change to become the thoughts of matter. Matter becomes the thought. Avidya becomes the thought. Means, definitely just as avidya itself cannot become the thought, there's definitely consciousness. Therefore, every thought, any cognition definitely is, any cognition is, you know, just as any wave is water with plus the form wave, any thought is, any cognition is consciousness plus thought, thought form. Water with wave form is equal to wave. So consciousness plus thought form is thought. A thought form has to be understood. That's all. You can't draw the thought form, okay? Because it is subtle. Now, thought, therefore, that we can say manifestation of knowledge, manifestation of the truth. Every, if you ask what is this vritti, any vritti is nothing but manifestation of the power of the reality. Any vritti is manifestation of power of the truth, reality. Now, what is reality? We understand reality in terms of its nature of knowing only. Always reality has to be, can be arrived at only as the truth of I, in terms of its nature of knowing. Therefore, jnanam. Reality is implied by the term jnanam. Jnanam Brahma. And we use also other words, chit, chaitanyam, or other words used, the same meaning. To mean awareness or consciousness, no, jnana, knowledge, three words used. So why jnanam? That which knows is jnanam. Janati iti jnanam. Janati iti jnanam. That which knows is knowledge. But even though we say this, that which knows is knowledge, the verb knows, K-N-O-W-S, when you say knows, is a verb. And verb is always associated with an action. In our understanding, most of the time, we always associate the verbs with the actions. We never associate the verbs with the very nature. No, but here there's some words, fire burns, sun illumines, or light illumines. You know, water pours. Not we pouring water, but what, like if we always say rain pours. So such verbs there, the verbs, some verbs are not associated with the actions. Some verbs are expression, they associated with the very nature. That is how they are. Like sun illumines or light illumines. That, no, so that which illumines is light. That which burns is fire. The heat. So here, that which knows is knowledge. So here, the knowing is the very nature. And when you say, you cannot draw or paint or color or describe what you arrive at as the truth. You just understand there's something else. That is why it's subtlest, most abstract. So we only understand arrive at the reality in terms of its nature of knowing. Therefore, the reality is implied by the term jnanam. So the when you say thought is the thought is the manifestation of the power of the reality. Now you can say thought is the manifestation of the power of the reality obtaining in the form of knowledge. Therefore, we can say thought is manifestation of the power of knowledge. Now you can say power is inseparable from the reality. Therefore, we can say what? Thought is manifestation of the knowledge. Thought is manifestation of knowledge. Therefore, if thought is the manifestation of knowledge, then what is the source of the manifestation? Pure knowledge. Okay? So the reality obtaining in the form of knowledge is the source of the manifestation. manifestation of knowledge obtaining in the form of the thought is the source of the word. Therefore, the word which comes later, okay, word itself can come out, word can come to exist, come into existence, originate, only if there is a corresponding thought, and the thought is possible only if there is manifestation of knowledge. Thought is the manifestation of the reality of knowledge. So knowledge is the source of the reality in obtaining in the form of pure knowledge or consciousness is the source of any thought. And this is a fact. Reality obtaining in the form of pure knowledge or consciousness is the source of any thought. Just as water is the source of any wave, reality, the most abstract, subtlest reality obtaining in the form of pure knowledge or consciousness is the source of the thought. This is a fact. And this fact itself you can understand only when you understand the reality in terms of its nature of knowing. And for us to be able to understand the reality in terms of its nature of knowing, we have to definitely analyze only this one cognition, I cognition. Not as if we can never arrive at the reality as a source of any other thought, except this I thought. After having arrived at the reality as the source of the I thought, then we can understand the fact that this one and the only reality obtaining in the form of knowledge is the source of all the thoughts. So also in all the minds. That is why we say reality, the thought itself is dependent on the reality. The thought has its existence in the very reality. Before it rises, we call it thought is resolved in reality. It rises, thought rises in the reality, exists in reality, and again resolves in the reality, in the upper form of knowledge. And this thought expressed is the word. That is why the words can be used to reveal any number of objects. Words can reveal, words can be like, words are the lights. Words can bring to light any object. Except one thing, words can never reveal. No word can be used. No word can ever reveal the truth, the absolute reality, the ultimate truth. No, why? Truth of everything is actually the truth of the very word also. Isn't it? So how can the word reveal the truth, which is the very source of the thought and which is the source of the word? That is why Shabda Pramanam, words also definitely fail. And it is said very beautifully in Taittiriya Upanishad. Why? No, yato vacho nivartante apraapya manasasaha. Yato vacho nivartante. Words return. Nivartante means return. Aprapya, without being able to reveal reality, without being able to arrive at the reality, incapable of arriving at the reality, the words return with the mind. They try to reveal. They go up to the mind. But beyond mind, they're not able to penetrate and reach the reality. What does it mean? What it means is, words themselves are expressions of the thoughts. And the thoughts themselves are manifestations of the reality, you know, in the form of knowledge. Therefore, the very reality obtaining in the form of knowledge, being the foremost source of word, can never be revealed by a word. Revealed by a word, so our reality can never become the object of the word. Object indicated by the word, but reality has to be arrived at as the very, very foremost source of the word. Reality is not an object indicated by a word, but reality has to be understood as the one being the very foremost, the beginning source of the word. Every word is manifestation of knowledge, expression of knowledge, which is a manifestation of knowledge. And now, this is how we say the entire cosmos also is manifestation of knowledge. Every object in this universe is what? Manifestation of knowledge. The entire universe is also looked upon as the manifestation of knowledge. Why? Because the universe, the world, or anything and everything in the world, nothing in the world exists independently outside of the word. The word itself, any object in the world, to have the astitvam, to have the status of being the existent, to enjoy, no, is dependent on a given word. Every object, object obtaining any form, obtaining in any form is dependent on its corresponding word to come to light. You think and tell me, you can disagree with me also. I can come back with an answer. Okay. Every object in this world obtaining in any form is dependent on its corresponding word to come to light in any given field. So we may not, say all of us may not know everything. Suppose people who have studied medicine may not know a lot of physics. People who studied physics may not know in any other discipline. Doesn't matter. That is a different thing. But in any field, any knowledge, wherever you use, the objects understood, the facts understood, the subtle formulae understood, any understanding of everything is possible. There are corresponding words. That is why we say definitely in any discipline, in any object, subtle or gross, definitely anything is very much dependent on its corresponding word or words to come to light, isn't it? And that word is definitely an expression of thought, an expression of manifestation of knowledge obtaining in the form of a thought, and the thought being manifestation of knowledge definitely has its what is. Has pure, the reality obtaining in the form of pure knowledge as its very source, which is beginning. That is why the whole world is what we say, every object or any object, the entire world constituted of objects But including our body, means complex, even subtle things, is everything is manifestation of knowledge. And when we look at this, understand this fact, nothing exists outside of the knowledge. Nothing exists outside of the manifest knowledge. And this is where this title of being the Lord, the Ishvara title, is attributed to the reality. Okay? We also understand that reality is the intelligent cause of the universe, also is the reality, Nimitta Karanam. And the Upadana Karanam of the universe also is the reality when you look at it. And Abhinnam. The two causes are inseparable. They were Abhinna Nimitta Upadana Karanam, or universe. Then you say Ishvara. So Ishvara is just the concept, a fact to be understood. So the whole cosmos is Jnanam. When you say everything is manifestation of knowledge, means everything is knowledge. Knowledge. The whole universe is nothing but knowledge. Do you see how I'm saying? Hope you understand. The everything is what? The knowledge. Manifest knowledge is what? Manifestation of knowledge means everything is knowledge. Now this is where we need to understand another fact. What about ajnanam? What about the ignorance now? Now we can say there is no such a thing called ignorance at all. So it's relative. Suppose if I don't know computer science, there's ignorance of computer science. But ignorance is also what? There is knowledge of the ignorance of computer science, isn't it? Ignorance is an object of knowledge. I do not know physics means there's ignorance of physics. The ignorance of physics is also what? Ignorance of anything is also an object of knowledge. Ignorance of anything is an object of knowledge. Whether any given thing, ignorance of anything is an object of knowledge. Suppose in deep sleep state, there is total ignorance. In waking state, there is ignorance of so many things. Now in waking state, we can say, I don't know this, I don't know that, I don't know this. Ignorance of so many things. In deep sleep state, there's a total ignorance. Why? There's ignorance of the existence of your own self. There's ignorance of the existence of the world. Isn't it? So in deep sleep state, there's total ignorance. In waking state, there is partial ignorance. And in that, the ignorance of so objective world also. Now tell me, isn't it ignorance an object of knowledge? Total ignorance is also what? Object of knowledge. And ignorance of anything is also what? Object of knowledge. So anything which is an object of knowledge is what? Object of thought. Anything which is an object of knowledge is an object of thought. An object of thought means it is object of, what? No, it's a manifestation of knowledge. Anything which is an object of knowledge is, anything which is an object of thought, object of knowledge is manifestation of knowledge. Any object and every object, all the objects are objects of knowledge or manifestations of knowledge. Why? The object is Object of knowledge means there's a knowledge which is a thought. When there's total ignorance, without the thought also there's some, still there's knowledge. There's pure knowledge, isn't it? Therefore, ignorance also is what? Ignorance does not exist outside of knowledge. Therefore, ignorance also is knowledge. Therefore, what is there is only knowledge. Do you agree with me this? Is it clear or not? What is there is only knowledge. Anything other than knowledge, whatever is only mithya. It is not you, Satya. Therefore, it is made very clear. The maximum the words can try to reveal what is available, obtaining whatever is in the form of subtle thoughts. Until then, the words can try maximum, try their best to reveal the objects obtaining in that subtle form. No thoughts. Subtle form. But beyond that, they cannot go penetrate. That is why it is said, words return, being incapable of revealing. No, they go up to the mind, then they return means, words can never reveal the reality. Words can, the reality can never become the object of thought, because reality is the very source of the source of the thought. Source of word. Reality is the first and the foremost source of the source of the thought, word. The source of the word is thought, and reality is the source of the thought. For reality is reality being the source of the source of the word. Is it? It can never be an object of word. So it is said words cannot reveal the reality. Understand? And here the question comes, if this is, it is, it has been made very, very clear, then how can we say the words of the Shastram serve as a pramanam, means of the knowledge of the truth? How can Shastra's words reveal the truth? How can Shastra Shastrasya Shabdaha Katam Satyam No Prakasheyu? How can the words of the Shastram reveal the truth? If words themselves are the manifestations of expressions of the manifestation of knowledge obtaining in the form of thoughts, how can words reveal the Shastra's words reveal? That is why people always think any book written is what? Any book written is what? Expression of thoughts. Isn't it? Thoughts, expression of words, when they get printed, it's a book. So book also is what? Knowledge. Saraswati. And when any knowledge expressed is looked upon as what? Saraswati. Book. So what about Veda? Veda is also a book for us, text. Even though it's not a printed material, not the printed form, still Veda is also text. So how can Veda Shastrasya Shabdaha, reveal? That's how we ask the question. So Shankara asks this question, he is going to help us understand how Shastram is a pramanam. It takes a lot of discussions and helps understand. Because many, and when people hesitate, why should we say it's the only pramanam? One thing, okay? Next thing, in this world, even in India, especially in India, okay, leave alone other countries, where the whole Bharatiya Dharma, Indian way of life, the Hindu Dharma, the Sanatana Dharma, the Vedika Dharma, the way of life enjoined in the Veda Shastra. In this place, it is made very clear that Veda is a Pramanam. Pramanam means it's a source of knowledge. The treasure source of knowledge of everything. What is life for? What is life lived for? And how one should live one's life? What is this life for? And how one's life should be lived? For these two questions, we need the answer. The answer is information, knowledge, which we get from the very Veda. And that Veda itself is made very clear what? Made very, very clear that knowledge is the only means for moksha. Because knowledge alone can help one resolve the ignorance. Why? Because ignorance is the root cause of the samsara. See, in this the beginningless, endless cycle of births and deaths is something natural, inevitable, unavoidable. There's no way of escaping from this cycle of beginningless, endless cycle of births and deaths. And there's a perfect order backing this samsara order, this chakram, this cycle. This function of the cycle is within the realm of the perfect order. There's no imperfection, disorder at all. If that is, that's why samsara is there. And here, but in this, when we go through this cycle of births and deaths, definitely between the birth and death, there will not be no life, will be only life of pleasures. And no life will be only life of pains also. This is also another fact. Definitely, irrespective of what we have and we do not have also, every life has to definitely go through what? Paths of opposites. Even though there will be difference in proportion. And that is what is not acceptable for us. What is not acceptable for a human mind is going through this life of paths of opposites. We want only desirable results. We don't want the undesirable other side. Of the paths of opposites, we want only one side of it. The desirable ones, not the undesirable ones. That is the thing. And then this is something inevitable here. And if we have to get rid of both means, if you don't want to go through pairs of opposites, then definitely you have to avoid what? The very birth itself. The only solution, I want to be born and I want to live, but I want to enjoy only pleasures means impossible. Some people don't like the idea of not being born again. They hate it. Oh my God, I won't come back again. They're very frightening for many, many people. Is that almost mature enough to understand this also? Therefore, Shastram says very beautifully, why this is there? And why, what is samsara? And why this samsara is there? The samsara itself is what now is because of the ajnanam, ignorance. If there is no such a thing called ajnanam at all, then samsara would not have been there. The cycle of births and deaths, and births and deaths fraught with the experience of pains and paths of opposites wouldn't have been there if there is no such thing called ajnanam at all. So, Shastram is a thorough analysis what the samsara is all about, how it is inevitable, and what is the cause of the samsara. That's been made very clear. You see, if it is ajnanam is the cause of samsara, and freedom from this bondage of samsara, only through jnanam it is possible. Okay? Which means, and for jnanam, now what is the, how can I attain the knowledge of the truth? And I tell you, even in this India, this most popular, highly supported, the people in the world, they all are raving about meditation as the means of the knowledge of the truth. They do not talk about jnanam at all. They do not have any idea of shravanam at all. No shravanam, no unfoldment. And they all teach lot of skill, lot of other exercises, physical exercise, prana exercises, and they all talk, they teach this Ashtanga yoga. They're all teaching a lot of discipline they're teaching. And even being given to the practice of these disciplines also definitely, you know, contributes for some sort of relaxation and freedom from stress and all those things. They do give some pleasure. Definitely they are very useful. But what they cannot do, resolution of ignorance is not all possible. And they all take meditation. They all emphasize that meditation can take them they can get people, some mystics are mistaken for wise people also in India. They use the term mystic and they translate the word mystic into wise person, jnani. No, there are a lot of confusions even in India. And the same thing is probably even in Shankara's period, okay, even before Shankara. Now, it is not something new now, even right from, for many, many ages, this idea has been there. Meditation, all the people emphasize this dhyanam, meditation as the means of attainment of the knowledge of the truth. And Shankara definitely says no. Why? Because meditation, now let me tell you this point, okay? Next point is about preparation for the next topic. Now I explained to you one thing. We are going to see that, but before that now, why meditation cannot be the means of knowledge of the truth? Why meditation cannot help you arrive at the truth? Why meditation cannot resolve the ignorance? Help resolve the ignorance? Because meditation itself, what is meditation? The definition you all know, I'm sure you all have very clear knowledge of the definition of meditation. Meditation is a mental activity, manasa vyaparaha. Manasa vyaparaha. Mental activity. It means action. See, the thought rises, it is a function, isn't it? A thought rises means the function of mentation. Thoughts rise, thought exists, thought resolve. There is it's a function. The mentation, minding is a function. But when you use your will and you focus attention on a given object, okay, you want to focus attention on a given object, then it is what now is activity. When you try to focus on a given thing, then it is what? So focusing attention, one's attention on a given object for a length of time is what? Meditation. And that the object happens to be a symbol of the Lord, we call it a meditation. And people simply tell you, okay, focus attention on a given thing. For them, it doesn't even need to symbolize the Lord. Simply, they teach some meditative techniques, how to focus attention. And along with it, they also teach some other pranayama, some other exercises also, or physical exercises also they teach along with this meditation. And each guru gives the yoga, adds his own name. In fact, yoga is nobody's property, okay? It's Indian. It's a Hindu dharma's property. No guru, no teacher can claim as its own discovery also. It's already a wealth, the timeless wealth available in India. Every teacher can say, I have got it from some teacher in India. But nobody can say it is as one's own discovery. Even that's another part. Now, meditation is a mental activity because we make efforts to focus attention on a given object. If it's a mental activity, it means it's an action. Meditation is not an involuntary function. It's a will-involved action. Meditation is a will-involved action. The Saguna Brahma Dhyanam, or generally in meditation, is what? Will-involved action. It's not involuntary function. Action means, then now the question comes. Okay, meditation is an action, we understood. Now what is an action? What is an action? If meditation is an action, and this meditation cannot remove ignorance, means meditation is an action. Why can't meditation remove ignorance? Why can't meditation give us the knowledge of the truth? Because meditation is an action. So what? Now you have to say, what is an action? Next question is what? What is an action? Action is knowingly done action, unknowingly done action, intentionally done action, unintentionally done action also. Any action is expression of, any action is expression of the pressure of desire, impelled by a desire. Every action is definitely an expression of the desire, or impelled, compelled, propelled by a phenomenon called desire. Okay, desire. Now, next question comes. So what? Action is the expression of desire or impelled by desire. Caused by desire. If there is no such a phenomenon called desire at all, then there cannot be something called action at all. Example you want to know? In deep sleep state, when no desire rises, no desire is there in sleep, therefore the body is what? Body is like a dead body. No movement, no physical movement, not even eating. We don't eat in sleep. We don't drink in sleep. We don't go to toilets. Of course, get up, but that's a different thing. We don't not do any other action in sleep. Know why? Because body is as good as dead in sleep because no activity is possible on the part of the body or sense, no? Because the diseases are resolved. So action presupposes the desire. So action is caused by the desire. Now the question comes, next question. Okay, so what? If action is what is the cause of what causes the, desire for, what causes the, what desire is the cause for the meditation? So somehow you know the value of the meditation. Therefore, this here comes, let me meditate. But here we say any action is expression of desire, caused by desire. Now, what is desire? What is desire? So, desire is a subtle phenomenon obtaining in the form of a thought. Desire is a subtle phenomenon obtaining in the form of a thought. It can be desire for ice cream or kulfi, chocolate, or desire for travel, desire for this or that. Any desire for an expression of a need. Desire is an expression of need caused by need. It's a subtle phenomenon obtaining in the form of a thought caused by the need. Needs are what? Definitely needs. The natural physical needs and also emotional needs. The need for it. Why there's a need for anything? So, need itself presupposes what? Need presupposes the either natural need are caused by natural needs are there. The emotional needs are also there. Suppose you have to go and eat, the food, need for food, because hunger is the cause. But hunger, you are not creating the hunger, it's a natural thing. So biological needs, so natural needs, okay? Biological needs are there, physical needs. Similarly, there are also emotional needs, which are also natural needs. The need is the cause for the desire. And Shastram says very clearly, emotional need is the basic need, natural needs. And why is need? Because there is sense of inadequacy. The need is because of, need is caused by inadequacy. The sense of inadequacy causes the need. The sense of inadequacy, where is it? It is centered on I. And why there is sense of inadequacy centered on I? Because the sense of smallness centered on I. Therefore, the sense of inadequacy centered on I. I am small, I am insignificant, I am unhappy, etc. I am a mortal, etc. And this sense of inadequacy centered on I is because of what? Because of sense of inadequacy, sense of smallness centered on I is the cause for the need, and need, what now? Needs cause the desires, and desires cause the actions. So there's an immediate cause. What is the immediate cause of the desire? Need. What is the immediate cause of the need? Sense of inadequacy, sense of smallness centered on I. And what is the immediate cause of the sense of smallness, sense of inadequacy centered on I? What is the cause? Because of the notions. Because of the conclusions we entertain about ourselves. Because of the raw notions or conclusions, the thoughts we entertain about ourselves. In terms of what? In terms of I am small, I am inadequate, I am a mortal. No? I don't have this, I have this. All these notions. So the notions, what are these notions? They're all where? Where is this? Where is the inadequacy centered on I? Where are these? They're all again in the form of thoughts only. Notions, all them thoughts only. Now the question comes, why? Whatever the perception of ourselves, the notion which I talked about ourselves, the all minimum of thoughts means why there is such conclusion. What is the cause of the conclusion about ourselves being small? How do we know that we are small? I am small in terms of knowledge. I am small in terms of wealth. I am small in terms of possessions. I am small in terms of positions. I am small. So I need to have more. If I am inadequate, knowledge-wise inadequate, wealth-wise inadequate, looks-wise inadequate, I am small inadequate. Why do we have these thoughts? Why? Why these thoughts are there? Not that we want to have these thoughts, not that we are holding on to these thoughts, not that we create these thoughts about ourselves. Why do we have these thoughts? Why these thoughts are there in the mind? Why these notions, conclusions? Because we see, no, because we see the physical forms problems are taken to be our problems. The emotional problems are taken to be our problems. No? So the problems, the limitations of the anatma, body, mind, sense complex are superimposed or taken to be the problem, superimposed the problems on I. This is called adhyaropaha, superimposition. This different meaning of adhyaropa here, okay? Don't mistake that. Srishti prakriya adhyaropa means different and here adhyaropa means different, okay? The word adhyaropaha used in Srishti Prakriya is different. The word adhyaropaha used here is different. So here, the limitations of anatma are taken to be limitations of the I. The problems of body, mind, sense complex are taken to be my problems. And this is called adhyaropa. So the adhyaropa is the cause for all the notions we entertain about ourselves helplessly. So why do we mistake the limitations of anatma upon the atma? Why do we mistake? Is it the plan? Is it something which we want to have it? No. Again, see, this is what understanding our helplessness. Helplessly, choicelessly, we mistake the limitations of anatma as limitations of the self. Is because because our perception of the self itself is wrong. We take the body, mind, sense complex for the self. For us, the meaning of I is the body, mind, sense complex. For us, what does the word I mean? I is equal to body, mind, sense complex. You mistake the body, mind, sense complex for I. Nothing wrong. But we stop only with that. There is something else beyond the mind, which also should be included as the meaning of the word I. Then it wouldn't have been a problem. The problem is nothing wrong in taking the body, mind, sense complex for as the meaning of the word I. But there's something beyond the mind, which is also there. That we do not know. Therefore, when you take the body, mind, sense complex alone as the meaning of the word I, then the limitations of body, mind, sense complex become our limitations. Therefore, we have wrong notions, wrong conclusions. And which are the cause for the needs? Needs cause the disease. Disease cause the actions. Okay. And actions produce the result. And to exhaust the result, again, assumption of another body is necessary. Never rebirth again. Now let me tell you here. Therefore, what is the rebirth itself is determined by what? The results of actions which have yet to be exhausted in the form of prarabdha. Janma is Janma presupposes the results of actions, prarabdha karma. And the results are caused by actions. And actions are caused by desires. And desires are because of the needs. The needs are because of the notions we entertain about ourselves. The notions we entertain about ourselves are because of because superimposition of limitations of the body, mind, its complex upon the I, the Atma. And that is because we mistake the body, mind, its complex as the meaning. Only body, mind, its complex alone is taken as the meaning of the word I. Object of I is what? Body, mind, one's own body, mind, its complex. A given body, mind, its complex is taken to be the meaning of the word I. Why only this is taken? It is called erroneous perception? Because I do not know what I am. See here, we do not know what exactly is the meaning of the word I. We do not know what exactly, see, all the words reveal the objects. Only one word, you know, even the used to reveal the objects, that word also what now? The source of the word. Only one word implies not just the objects, but implies the source of the word. That is I, isn't it? So we do not know what I is, what I means. Therefore, there's ignorance. Therefore, now please understand, it is the ignorance of the self, otherwise called ignorance of the truth, is the root cause of the very samsara. This is a parampara karanani, isn't it? Paramparayaka, one is the immediate cause and the root cause. We have to say the immediate cause and the root cause. What is the immediate cause of the rebirth or janma? Immediate cause of the birth is prarabdha karma phalam. Prarabdha karma phalam means the unexhausted result of the previously done actions which are ready for fructification. Isn't it? Is the immediate cause of the rebirth. But what is the root cause of the rebirth? Ignorance. Is it clear? So in this order, you can see karma also comes in between. So until the rebirth, until janma, everything which comes in the sequence, in the order, is all what? All of them have ignorance as the root cause. What is the root cause of rebirth? No, ignorance. What is the immediate cause of rebirth? Karma phalam. What is the immediate cause of the phalam? Karma. And what is the root cause of the karma? Ignorance. We underline the sentence, okay? The root, what is the immediate cause of the action? Desire. The immediate cause of the action is desire, but the root cause of the action is ignorance. And what is the immediate cause of the desire? Need. Physical, the natural, biological, emotional needs are the cause for the results. Immediate cause of the desires. And what are the root cause of the emotional need, biological needs? Ignorance. So the immediate cause and the root cause. Now tell me, the action itself is caused by the desire. So desire is the immediate cause of the action. And for the desire, root cause is ignorance. Therefore, root cause of the action also is ignorance. What is the root cause of the action? Ignorance. Is it clear now? Ajnanam, ignorance is the root cause of the action. So ignorance action is what now? Ignorance friendly. Isn't it? Action is ignorance friendly. Why act is ignorance friendly? Because ignorance action itself is the product of ignorance. Ignorance is the root cause of the action. That does not mean that we should not perform actions, okay? See, when you're analyzing something different, subtle things, so don't mistake. We should not stretch these things and then get misguided. Shastram does not tell us not to perform actions. Oh, action is product of ignorance, so we should not perform. No, that is not the idea here. We are analyzing here why there is such a thing called action happening. Action itself is caused by the immediate cause and the root cause. If desire is the immediate cause of the action, and for the desire, immediate cause is the emotional and natural, uncreated, natural, biological and emotional needs cause the desires. The needs are caused by the notions. The notions are like this. Therefore, anyway, ignorance. And what is the cause of the ignorance? Tell me. You have to stop with the ignorance. Okay? What is the immediate cause of the ignorance? Really speaking, ignorance is not caused by anything. You can go up to ignorance. Okay? Ignorance is the root cause of, because ajnanam, adhyasaha, adhyaropaha, then kama. Kama means asha, desire, kama, karma, palam, janma. Got the order now? Sanskrit words, they sound better. Ajnanam, adhyasaha, adhyaropaha, ahankaraha, kama, karma, palam, janma, rebirth. So in this order, we understand ajnanam is the root cause of everything. And for everything, there's an immediate cause also. But what is the immediate cause of ignorance? No cause. You know why? Nothing creates ignorance. Ignorance is not created by anything. Ignorance is not product of anything. Ignorance also is anadi. That is why in 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you all would have learned this verse. Purusha of Prakriti Chaiva Vidyanadi Ubhavapi. Hey Arjuna, may you understand both are beginningless. Anadi. Isn't it? Prakritim Purusham Chaiva Vidyanadi Ubhavapi. They both are beginningless. So ignorance, avidya has no beginning. Ignorance has no beginning. In fact, ignorance, there's no such thing called ignorance. The power of the reality unmanifests ignorance. Something natural. See, water does not create stillness. Okay, when there is stillness of water, there is stillness of water, that's all. Similarly here, ignorance is not created, that's a product. So ignorance is just what? Unmanifest power of the reality. Therefore, ignorance is very natural. And this ignorance is the root cause. When you say this ignorance cannot be destroyed, it can be resolved. Okay? Just as how we understand, a stillness is nothing but water. Why? Because stillness does not exist independent of the water. Similarly, one day you have to resolve this ajnanam also in its very truth. So ignorance is now not knowing what you are is the root cause, isn't it? Therefore, ignorance is the root cause of the samsara, root cause of the action, and meditation is, if we come to the point now, meditation is what? Manasam karma, manasa vyaparaha, whether physical activity, oral activity, mental activity, any action is caused by desire. Desire is caused by the needs, like that we had to go. If ignorance is the root cause of the action, how can action remove ignorance? Ignorance is the root cause of the action. How can this action caused by ignorance remove the ignorance? Do you get the point what I'm saying? Therefore, action can never remove ignorance. And meditation happens to be a mental activity. Meditation also cannot remove ignorance. And when you try to, by practice repeatedly, therefore meditation is not the means of attainment of knowledge of the truth. Meditation is not the means of attainment of knowledge of the truth, because meditation itself is an action which is produced, caused by ignorance, cannot remove ignorance. And if at all people say, no, meditating, when all the thoughts are resolved, desire is resolved, no, all the pressures are resolved, then can we say that we can attain the truth? No. When all the desires or all the thoughts are resolved, also there'll be only total ignorance. Meditation maximum take you to remain in total ignorance. Hope you understand what I'm saying. When all the thoughts are resolved, then the stillness of mind means maximum meditation can take you from half knowledge to total ignorance. And then you have what? Bliss. But if you can continue to remain in bliss in total ignorance, well and good. Unfortunately, you cannot remain because the matter is of the nature of undergoing changes. Again, you'll wake up. That is why. And but people, unfortunately, meditation, by constant practice, when it helps you resolve all your thoughts, when it takes you to the condition of remaining totally, going through this total ignorance, all the thoughts are resolved means there'll be total ignorance. Isn't it? Like in sleep. Pooja Swamiji used to tell me so many times in the class, Amma, Samadhi is nothing like a sleep, Amma. He used to tell me like this. I used to wonder why he's telling like this. Amma, samadhi is like, I think like exactly, no? Like a sleep. But means the constant practice of meditation will help you have all the thoughts resolved. When all the thoughts are resolved, what is happening in sleep? Exactly like that. Maybe it is a little more than that. Maybe you are aware that you are. Even then, you can have some sort of experience. There are some people in our own class, you know, they do talk about the experience. They cannot deny the experience. If we deny the experience, it will be very painful. No, we don't need to deny the experience. Definitely there's some experience. But meditation is useful, but definitely it does not, you know, it is not, it's like the sleep, I can, not exactly like the sleep, it's like the sleep, how you have all the thoughts resolved. Therefore, I'm not belittling meditation. We understand, it has its own value. But how much it should be used? What is it means for? Meditation is useful, it serves a purpose, but meditation itself will not remove ignorance. Meditation is not the means of attainment of knowledge of the truth. Because anything which helps you resolve the ignorance alone is the means for the knowledge of the truth. And meditation will not help resolve ignorance because meditation itself is a product of ignorance. Therefore, we say Vedanta definitely says it is the Shravanam, it is the systematic study of the Shastram, which is the unfoldment of the words of the Shastram for a length of time, not that some listen to few things continuously from a given teacher. Then it will help slowly, it will help you resolve the jnanam, and even then our own patibandha will be there, we have to tackle, and the lifestyle we follow, lots of things contribute together for us, what? For the clear knowledge. Therefore, meditation is not the means of attainment of knowledge. Shravanam is important. And Shravanam means listening to what? Listening to the unfoldment of the words of the scripture, and which is called Shravanam, which is called Vedanta Pramana Angikaranam. Acceptance of Vedanta as the Pramanam. Acceptance of Vedanta as the Pramanam. Is very important. Therefore, now we just two understood, I made very clear, two things very clear. What are the two things, remember? Meditation, why meditation cannot be the means of attainment of the truth, attainment of the knowledge of the truth. Then second, I said, why words cannot reveal the Atma. But how Vedanta is the Pramanam, How Shravanam is the only means of the attainment of the knowledge of the truth. Shravanam alone can help resolve the Ajnanam. Shravanam, listening to the unfoldment of the meaning of the words of the Shastram, serve as a means of attainment of the knowledge of the truth. And how Vedantic words serve as a Pramanam. Even the words cannot reveal the truth. How words of Vedanta, how do they serve as means of knowledge of the truth? These two factors we have to understand. The next class will be the Shankara's unfoldment of Shastra Pramanyam with reference to Samantras in the first chapter of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. They have prepared you for the next class. Even though this today what is said is not something new, they have been talking to you for quite some time, but specifically I took those aspects to make it very clear. Now I give you the time. Is there any doubt in what I said today? It is not something new what I said today. I've been talking to you. Today I put them all together. Is it clear or not? Again, the word in the Ishvara, also when you say, so Shivaha, Shivaratri, Shiva is one of the names attributed to the Lord. Especially when you look at the reality as the one in which everything resolves and remains as one. Shiva is the name, one of the names of the Lord, one of the names of the Lord, the Lordship, actually the very reality itself, because the Lordship itself is attributed to the reality, because it is, because many, the reality is the one in which everything remains resolved as one, undifferentiated and unmanifest. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.